So last week we started the end, it was the first session, and we were talking about I don't know. I'm not going to try to summarize it, I guess. We're getting ready to investigate the way that the senses operate and the way that we're going to be doing that over the next few weeks. Is surprising, I think, because what we're going to be focusing on is this discussion in this section of Knowledge of Time and Space about fields and field mechanisms. And there's the notion here that for a particular sense to function, for instance, when I see an apple, there's a field in operation, and the apple is I'm not sure the best way to say that, is given by the field, is presented by the field, is available within the field, but so is the activity of seeing the apple, and for that matter, so is the one who does the seeing. That would be you, or me, or the I. So all of those are a part of the field, and that's the kind of structure that we're going to be working with. And I realized this week in looking at the material that in a sense what we're doing is a challenge, because we're starting in what is on page 370 or so of Knowledge of Time and Space, which in itself is not an easy book. And although I said last week that one of the characteristics of Knowledge of Time and Space is that it doesn't so much have a linear argument, it presents a lot of different facets. Nonetheless, something builds up over the course of reading the book, and we're just jumping in at a pretty advanced stage. And so when we talk about the senses here, we're doing it in a pretty sophisticated way. So my job is to try to make it more make sure that the approach that's being presented here is reasonably accessible, and that we have a way of working with it. Number one, that we understand what's going on, and what's being presented in the text, and number two, that we can put it into effect, because of course a theoretical understanding is an important starting point. We wouldn't be reading these big fat books or even little passages from these big fat books if we didn't think that a kind of theoretical discussion was helpful in opening up new possibilities. But once you've opened up the possibility, you have to activate it. And so that's always the balance in the TSK vision. You are working with the structures, you are challenging your ordinary understanding at many different levels in many different ways, and then, in effect, when you've cleared away some space that way, when you've created an opening, then you see what's possible within that opening, and that's the experiential dimension. So that's what we're trying to do here. It sounds pretty complicated. Well, let me say two things about the reading for this week. One is, it's very short. When I started to, when I got ready to prepare for class a few days ago, and I went and I looked at this, my first reaction was, "Gee, this is short. Is there really enough to say about this passage?" And then, as is typically the case for me with TSK, when I looked at it carefully, I realized that it was very rich, and in fact, there's a lot more to say than we're really going to be able to explore. So don't let the fact that it's so short fool you. There's a lot here to work with. The second thing to say about this reading is that in terms of working with the senses, it makes it sound very complicated. In one way, that's right. I mean, that is what he's saying, is that it's very complicated. He says, and he's talking about the senses, On page 372, he kind of lays out how it is that we actually see something, and he talks about projections and reactions and an act of recognition and analysis. And in every case, with every one of those activities, a field is coming into operation. And that is the part that makes it sound a little complicated. And maybe let's look at the first paragraph at the top of page 373. He says, "The transition from one step in this process to the next depends on all the stages being interrelated and codependent." Already a lot, that would be a lot to try to analyze, wouldn't it? "Yet each faculty and even each transition between faculties could be seen as having its own field and feel." And then he says in the next paragraph, he says, well, do we really have to get this complicated? People just say, well, sure, the eye sees something and I recognize it, and that's just our ordinary understanding, and why do we have to make it this complicated? And of course, the answer that he gives, and this is the answer, I suppose, that you give for the TSK vision in general, you say, well, why bother? Why do this kind of investigation and inquiry? And I can, I have to assume, I think, that all of you have an answer to that for yourselves. I mean, what I say is not so important, but something brings you here, something brings you to participate in this phone call, and presumably it's a sense that there's something of value or potentially of value here. But the if you want a kind of general way of describing that, the answer is it has to do with knowledge, right? He says if we just accept the ordinary understanding of the senses, I'm looking at the second full paragraph on page 373, then that perspective binds knowledge to what is already known. And he says, here's how we're going to challenge that. We don't want to settle for what's already known, so we're going to challenge that. And here's how we're going to do it, by focusing on the transitions between fields. And then he goes on to say something about that transition between fields. Now, before we get into that, and that really is where I want to focus today, but before we get into that, I want to do a little bit with practice. And I want to do the same practice that we did last week. And I'm doing this because, it really helps to have something concrete to focus on here, so that it doesn't get too theoretical. And the practice that we did last week was looking at the distinction between looking at an object and recognizing it, and the example that we used, because the example that's in the text is seeing a red apple. That's one possibility, that's our ordinary understanding. And the other possibility is trying to look away from the identity of the red apple and just seeing it as a red patch. Now, of course, if you look at an apple, it's not, there's no single apple that's completely purely red, I don't think. There's more going on. But the basic idea is you look away from the identity and you look toward the visual experience. You try to, strip out the name. And I can't remember if we discussed this last week, but there is a line, there is something said by an artist named Robert Irwin that I think is very helpful here. And it actually was the title of a book about Robert Irwin that somebody wrote. But it's a quote from him. And he says, "Seeing is forgetting the name of the thing that you see." And that's roughly what we're doing. We are forgetting or setting aside the name of the thing. That's the practice. Now, I'm not saying, and in fact, I'm going to be saying something quite different in a bit. I'm not saying that this is the purpose of what we're doing. We're just giving ourselves a possibility to work with here. So there is the apple, or I'm going to ask you now to look at something else, and it could be a wall. Might not be the best example, but might be, I don't know. There's computer. I'm looking at a computer because, after all, and I guess a lot of you are, but computers are so complicated, maybe that's not so good. So find something kind of simple, maybe colorful, and for a few minutes now, we will do this practice. You look at it the first time and you say, oh, it's an apple, or oh, it's a daffodil, whatever. And then the practice is to kind of strip away that identity and just look at the color dimension. So that's clear? We did it last week.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do that for a couple of minutes, and then we will come back. I'm going to turn off the video because I get self-conscious in this circumstance. So, couple of minutes only. Okay, so let's come back together. And I'm going to ask you for comments, but I see we've already got something from David. Okay, so David raises a question that I asked about in the orientation. And this is an important part of the exercise, or it's a valuable place to look. There's many places you could look. So the question was, when you perceive a colored patch, what about the one who perceives the patch? And David says, okay, if you look at the color, the self, the one who's controlling and doing, seems to get out of the way, and the distance between subject and object disappears. That's not quite his word. So then there's more color and feeling and kind of evocative feelings and more swimming in the feeling and not so much judgments about them. Okay, so I think that that's a valuable point to notice, and it's related to what people said last week when we did this practice, which is that to the extent you can find, you can connect more directly or more immediately simply to the color patch quality of what you see, or this would work for hearing or the other senses, of course. The self gets out of the way. There's a kind of a richness and an aliveness to experience. And that's interesting and important, and it may work more sometimes than others. You may have that experience more sometimes than others. And Tina says something that I think is similar to what you said last week, Tina, which is that it feels more alive. There's a connection to the aliveness of being. There's a freeing. There's an opening up. Anybody else want to say anything about the experience that you just had? And let me from doing it during the week, during the practice, during the week. And let me say that, when people don't comment, sometimes I take that to mean that you didn't see anything special, or in fact you had a hard time focusing in on the practice at all. And of course that's fine. We're using these exercises to give us a little something to work with and think about, and so that we can connect the reading to our own experience. Anybody else? Hayward.
I didn't have much of an experience on this occasion, but it reminded me as I was doing it of awakening in the night and not recognizing something. And it had that quality of non-recognition. Seeing something but not recognizing what it is. So it had the quality of not knowing.
Right. Okay, so seeing an object and not recognizing it, that's a little, I mean, it's also possible sometimes you wake up at night for a moment, you don't recognize even where you are, but that's not what you're talking about. You're just talking about not seeing
No, I'm
something.
talking about not recognizing a form, not recognizing
Right,
a form.
okay. And that quality of non-recognition, can you say something about what that feels like?
Bewildering.
Okay, a kind of a bewilderment. Well, that's good. Tina adds that there's a sense of energy that's tapped into in doing this practice. And Robert says, in focusing on the practice, I guess, there's a sense of connection, a deeper awareness, a sense of newness and aliveness. Okay, I'm going to stop the discussion there, but that's great. First of all, I think it's really nice and to be able to have these kinds of experiences, and very interesting that it's not that difficult. We spend a lot of our lives craving certain kinds of experience, and it's interesting to realize that part of what we crave, at least, maybe that sense of aliveness or connection, is pretty readily available. That in itself is interesting. Okay, there's a couple other people who have commented, and I'm going to look at that. So, right, Tina says, that's what's magical about TSK. Well, I think that's actually true. It's very accessible. The possibility of a different kind of knowing is very accessible. So Karin says, okay, one thing you may notice, and this is really true, is that there's a lot of naming going on. You look at an object and you just automatically assign names. And Caroline says, the bewilderment seems like a gateway. And I think that's right. Rinpoche writes in many places in the TSK books that that not knowing is really important. As he says it somewhere in this book, I don't remember where, but he says, when we say, I know, we're saying, this is where I stop. I stop here. When we don't know, now bewilderment, can have a kind of an emotional quality to it, which is can be agitating, but the not knowing really is a kind of a gateway, the possibility of seeing something. And that's why, this practice of just looking at the color instead of the shape is a way of unknowing, right? Of choosing not to know, as Irwin says in that quote. I think he actually says it's learning to forget the name of the thing you see. That's what seeing is. So we have to learn, we have to unknow the name. And well, good. I'm glad to see there's a lot of comments on this. And Sudaba says, so if we do a small exercise like this, there's a kind of a stillness and more depth to it. And what typically happens then is the thoughts come up, and there's distraction that diffuses the depth. And that's true, of course. One of the things to know, one of the things to recognize about the way the mind operates, you might say about the field of ordinary awareness, because I'm going to start trying to shift us back in toward the field dimension now. One of the things about the field of ordinary awareness is that it's scattered. We live very scattered lives. The mind jumps here and there. And so it's true that a kind of a quick focus like this can be helpful. And in doing this practice, if you want to keep working with this practice, which is a really nice practice because you can do it anytime, it's very easy. It's probably a good idea just to try for a few seconds here and there, look at something. Can you unknow? Can you forget? Can you see the color rather than the name? So that would be the practice. Okay, now, as I said, I want to take this to use it more as an example of working with fields. And there's two things we can say. If you think about this as a question of a field in operation, you'd say, well, the field in which an apple appears seems to be different from the field in which a red patch appears. Or, the field in which a daffodil appears is different from the field in which a yellow patch appears. The object on which we focus changes the field. And I want to use that as a way of trying to clarify a little what we mean by field, because when people talk about greater aliveness, greater openness, greater stillness, that's a question of the field changing. That is the qualities of what are possible within a particular situation change. And I'm saying that you could look at that as a change in the field. The same thing is true with respect to bewilderment or not knowing or confusion. When that quality comes into play, it's as though the field shifts. And it's not just as though. I'm suggesting that's one way of looking at the experience. You say, well, the field of what's happening, you say, talking about fields is a way of looking at the whole of what's happening in a particular moment. And so you can say the quality of confusion enters the field, or maybe even say pervades the field, or the quality of openness, the quality of stillness. And typically I think it's helpful to look at qualities because they are pervasive. They show up, it's not as though there's a little patch of confusion over in the corner of your experience. Your experience is pervaded by confusion. Tina's describing that here as a kind of a systems thinking. Yeah, I think that's right. You can definitely see it as a system or as a whole, or just to use the word that we're using, field. Okay, so with that, well, let me make one more point. Even though we are talking about a shift in the field that comes from changing the focus from the identity of the thing we see to just the color perspective or the color of what we see, and that means we're focusing then on the object, there is still a sense in which there is a field that has to do with the act of sensing. And that's, you could say, not affected by the fact that we see a red patch or see an apple. In other words, there's the field of seeing, right? And, or the field of hearing, or the field of recognizing. So this is a different way of thinking about experience or looking at experience. And I'll mention again that the place where the idea of field is introduced in Knowledge of Time and Space is around page 178. And you might want to go back there and look at that and see how he describes this. Okay. So we have the kind of the qualities of the field that come with a particular kind of experience, and we can continue to experiment with that, and that can continue to be your practice during the week. We also have the field of the sense, the particular sense in operation. And I want to take a little time now to describe or to go into Rinpoche's description of how the field functions. And I'm looking at the last paragraph of this very short chapter, where Rinpoche talks about that. And he says, for each of the senses, I'm skipping the first 1.5 lines of the paragraph. And then he says, for each of the senses, its power to function depends on a very specific field mechanism. So it's not just that there's a field, but there's a field mechanism. That is, the field is something alive, you could say. Mechanism sounds like a machine. You could think about it that way. But the point is that something is happening. Something has been activated. The field is not like a painting that's just static. It's active and dynamic, and something is going on. So for each of the senses, its power to function depends on a very specific field mechanism that reaches both backward and forward in time and allows for transitions through space. And I really want to focus on that sentence, but let's go ahead and read the next sentence. Only through the operation of this mechanism does it seem possible for what has been recorded to be transcribed and made available for transmission. Now, that image is one that Rinpoche uses in various places. The idea is, and this came up in the reading for last week, that the whole idea of recognizing something, which we do automatically, so we see the apple and we know that it's an apple, in order for that to have been, for that to work, there has to have been a prior perception, a prior distinguishing that tells us that the apple is an apple. And that distinguishing has to have been recorded, and this is the image that Rinpoche uses, recorded, transcribed, and made available for transmission. So here we are in the moment, we see the apple. That's the outcome of a process in which a previous perception has been recorded, transcribed, made available for transmission, and presumably then also transmitted. Okay, but I really want to go back and look for a moment at the idea of a field mechanism that reaches both backward and forward in time and allows for transitions through space. So when you say the mechanism reaches backward in time, that actually is already presupposed in what we just talked about, because if you accept if you work with that analogy that says something has been recorded and is transmitted forward, well, there has to be a reaching backward to what's been recorded to take hold of it or to play the recording. Well, here he's talking about a transcription, to read the transcription, I guess, but either image would work. You have to reach back in time. And that's actually, it's a very simple point in a way. We know that the apple is an apple. Why do we know that the apple is an apple? Because we've learned to accept or learn to recognize apples. When we're growing up, sometimes you see little kids that are learning language, and maybe they think that all fruits are apples. And so every time they see a fruit of any kind, they say apple. And so the parents say, no, that's a pear. This is an apple. And eventually they get it, right? So there's a reaching backwards in time, that's all. So the field, in order for the notion of apple to come into play, the field has to have this mechanism which allows us to reach back in time. And that's something you might not so naturally think of, but that's the point that Rinpoche is making here about fields. It reaches backwards in time. Now, what about reaching forward in time? Which he also says, right? The mechanism reaches forward in time. Well, you could say we recognize it now as an apple, and that recognition is going to form the basis for recognition. If we look away and look back, it's still an apple. We still see an apple. So that would be a reaching forward in time. But I think it's a little bit more than that. And I want to go back to look at page 373. And he says, let's see here. Down at the bottom, at the beginning of the last paragraph on that page, that starts on that page, he says, determination of what has been sensed. Okay? So, in other words, this is the identification or determination of the apple that we're seeing, likewise depends on the transmission of previously recorded distinctions. So, we've already talked about that are communicated forward in time. Actually, that's not what I wanted to point to. It's what I had marked, but it's not what I wanted to point to. I actually want to go up to the previous paragraph, second sentence of the previous paragraph, where he says he's talking about the transitions between fields. And he says, the transitions that seem, he's talking about the senses, the transitions that seem so self-evident are actually quite complex, although they feel instantaneous and direct. That is, when I look at an apple, it's an apple. I don't have to wait 5 seconds for all of the neurons to work in my brain, and then I can say apple. No, it's just an apple. We know that. So it may seem instantaneous and direct, but these transitions depend on a rhythm of transmission over time that succeeds in transferring a quality of momentum and aliveness. So it's that quality of momentum and aliveness that I think is what Rinpoche is pointing to when he talks about the field mechanism reaching forward in time. There is an aliveness to experience. So there's a backward recognition based on what we know, and there's a forward momentum and aliveness. And I think that this applies. I want to connect this back up for just a moment to the difference between seeing an apple and seeing a red patch. There's the backward reaching out to identify, and there's the forward transmission and aliveness. And when we see a red patch instead of an apple, there's not so much of that recognition going on, right? There's mostly just the momentum and the aliveness. There's the transmission. Something is being transmitted in the field. There's a kind of an aliveness in the field. And by forgetting the name, by forgetting the identity, or even by falling into a kind of confusion, what happens is that we're more in contact with that aliveness. So that's really, I think, the main point I wanted to make about time, anyway, the temporal dimension. The thing about space, all I can say is that, and if you think about it for a moment, I mean, all I can say, because we're running out of time, is all I can say is that if you think about it for a moment, there has to be a transmission across fields. And Rinpoche says that very specifically. We don't really know what that is. He talks about a communication, actually, across fields. So, because you have, you have the field in which you saw the apple a moment ago, and now you have the field in which you're seeing the apple again, and somehow there's got to be a transmission across them. So, when we look, and I have to kind of go into summing up mode because we're pretty much out of time. When we look, we recognize that there's a way of looking at this whole process of sensing, which you can recast it in terms of fields of experience. So, seeing the apple as a field of experience, stripping away the identity and seeing a red patch is also a field of experience. Anytime a sense is in operation, anytime a sense is in operation, and Tina points out here that, she doesn't like the word forgetting, and I think I understand why. It's not as though you forget something valuable. What you do is you kind of forget to focus on the identity. Or you choose is probably a better way to say it. You choose not to focus on the identity, and you are open to the aliveness of the transmission forward within the field. But anytime the field operates, or anytime the sense is operating, you could see it, you could experience it in this kind of field dimension. And that's where we want to be going. So, one way to really get a sense of that, to get a sense of the field as the field, is to do this practice of stripping away or connecting with the color rather than the identity, the sound of the sound rather than the source of the sound. This comes up with each of the senses. That's one way to look at it. Even if you just go with the immediacy of experience, the telephone, the apple, the computer, whatever, that same transmission is going on. And if you kind of experiment during the next week with looking at this, looking at your experience in this kind of field perspective, you may get a better sense of that. So in looking at the field, you can just try to do it kind of conceptually and say, well, I'm moving through different fields. Oh boy, I may be misremembering this poem. It just popped into my head, but it's an E.E. Cummings poem. And I think the first line is something like, "My father moved through fields of love," which is very sweet. So that's another kind of field. The point is that we're always moving through fields, and you could experiment with seeing things in that way. That's an important aspect. When you change the focus of the field, that is the object on which the field focuses, the apple or the red patch, or it doesn't have to be a specific object, it may just be the kind of field of waiting for a job interview, let's say. That's a certain kind of field. So, when the object shifts, the field shifts, and that's another way to explore the notion of the field. And then the third thing you could say is just look in any situation. What are the qualities? What are you feeling? And this takes us more in, you could say, kind of a Cumnier direction for people who are familiar with that. What's going on, not in terms of the thing or the identity on which the field centers, but the kind of subtle qualities that move through the field. So those are all ways of working with fields. And as you will see in the reading for next week, Rinpoche goes now into the relationship between fields and senses in a more complete way. I think we will stop there. David has a comment on the chat, which I'm not going to comment on, but we will save these chats. Kathleen, you will save these chats? Is that true? Yes, I'm going to assume it. I'll try to save them too. And
Yes,
post
I
them.
will save these chats.
Okay, thank you. So that's it for this week. Keep exploring and be looking now, not just at the content, which we talked about, but this field approach to experience. That's what to look at. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. See you next week.